Welcome to Foundations of Learning. I'm your host, Shaylee Flint. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce you to Amy Vail, founder of For the Cubs, a mission-driven company dedicated to supporting children in foster care by meeting their essential needs and fostering a sense of calm in their environments. Amy's journey is nothing short of extraordinary. From her rugged upbringing in the Australian outback to moving to the U.S. and choosing adoption over having her own children, Amy's story is filled with heart, resilience, and purpose. In this episode, we explore the experiences that shaped her, including the lasting impact of a childhood mentor, her connection to foster care, and the profound way her grandfather's passing inspired For the Cubs. You'll hear Amy's heartfelt advice for anyone considering fostering or adoption and learn how For the Cubs is making a tangible difference by partnering with One Simple Wish, ensuring that every purchase helps a foster child in need. Get ready to be inspired by Amy's journey and her commitment to creating a brighter future for children in foster care. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Foundations of Learning podcast. I hope to inspire you to actively participate in your child's learning journey, fostering a love for knowledge and nurturing the skills necessary for success in a rapidly changing world. Parents, have you ever wondered what your kids are really learning about important topics like taxes, freedom, and responsibility? As an educator, I once had to teach a social studies lesson that only focused on the positives of taxes, completely ignoring the downsides of overtaxation or the importance of personal responsibility. It made me realize how limited the perspective is in many traditional curricula. That's why I'm so passionate about the Tuttle Twins books. These books teach kids both sides of important issues like economics, freedom, and entrepreneurship in a way that's fun, engaging, and easy to understand. They help children think critically and understand the world in a more balanced way. If you're ready to check it out, use my link down below to explore their incredible resources, give your kids the tools to think for themselves, and support my podcast. All right, Amy, so you are the founder of For the Cubs, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, perfect. And you are actually originally from Australia, and you lived in the rugged Australian outback. And I would love to know what exactly that is like, because I'm not going to lie, Australia seems very intimidating to me. Like, kangaroos are just one thing that freaks me out. So what was that like growing up like that?
Yeah, it was definitely a very unique experience that I didn't fully appreciate was quite so unique until I grew up and ventured out into the world. So growing up, I was surrounded by vines. My dad was a farmer and he harvested grapes. And so with that came a lot of critters. So all the stories you hear about Australian animals being a little bit scary is very true. I have a very vivid memory that this will paint sort of a picture of what it was like growing up out there. I lived on the farmhouse. It was surrounded by the vines. And so a lot of the wildlife would show up at our back door. And so I remember as a little kid, I was walking down the back path towards the back door, and my dad was standing on the back door step. And he looked at me very clearly and said, "Stay there." And it was in that tone where you know, like, you need to listen to what is happening. And there was a king brown snake that was coming towards me. And the way to handle a king brown is to kill it. So my dad had to get the shovel and kill it. And that was a pretty normal occurrence for me. So king brown snakes are something you don't want to run into, especially as a little kid. They're pretty scary. And the top tip is to stay still, because obviously they can feel the vibration. So even just knowing like how to handle a dangerous animal like a snake or a spider, knowing which ones are dangerous, which ones are not, they're all the types of things that you learn growing up in the Australian outback. And we would have everything from rabbits to roos to wild pigs and everything in between on our property. Just because that's the nature of living in the outback. So it was a pretty wild experience, but I think it also shaped a lot of things that I appreciate now that I didn't grow up with, just because it's a very simple life living in the outback. And so that was a really unique experience that I carry with me today and appreciate a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've seen lots of videos of Australian snakes and spiders. And like I said, kangaroos are one thing. Maybe I'm just because I don't know kangaroos, but they look like a deer that have claws and can stand on 2 feet. Like that to me, I'm like so terrifying. But yeah, the spiders and the snakes, I think would maybe be even a bigger fear of mine. And I think that is important too to learn, how to navigate your environment. And I think that it probably equipped you with a lot of skills that a lot of other people probably don't have, just because you had to be in that constant, like, you had to know your environment very well, or it could be
Absolutely.
dangerous.
Very much so. Very much so.
So you were constantly meeting new people who stayed on your parents' property. How did meeting these people shape you?
I think it opened my eyes to how big the world really was at a very young age. I remember there were people from all over the world that would bring different experiences to literally to our dining table. We had a amazing Indian guy who came and he cooked for my family, and he taught us that most of the food that they eat is with bread and their hand. And so as a little kid, those types of experiences and being exposed to different cuisines, different cultures, different ways of life, and then also presenting them with our way of life, it was very much a way to open my eyes to opportunity that existed out in the world that oftentimes a lot of people don't get to see as they're growing up, unless you're living in a very diverse community. Australia is very much a, they call it a melting pot of cultures, which is very true. But when you're in the outback, it can be more isolating than anything. And so being able to have that experience so far out in the desert, essentially, was really cool because it made me more curious as I was growing and wanted to really explore the world, and be open to those different cultures and those different experiences.
I think that's amazing because I do know, like, working as an educator here in Utah, right? There are a lot of kids that don't have any of those experiences whatsoever. Like, even in the community that I have worked in, which is very diverse, there is still, we don't get to experience learning about other cultures in a more immersive way, right? Like, actually immersing yourself in that culture, and really meeting the people in this culture. Like, you can do everything you want with books and things like that, and trying to immerse that in the classroom through literature, but it's just not the same as having that experience through the people and getting to know them and really getting to know their culture. So I think that's super awesome. And I bet that it also opened your eyes to how differently you may live to how someone else lives, right? And that even though they're super different, that doesn't mean one is better than the other. It's just that it's different, right? And I think that's a super impactful thing to learn.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the difference between content that you see on the internet, which is wonderful, and don't get me wrong, it has a ton of value to it. But there is something very different about sitting across the table from someone and sharing a meal that they eat every single day, and them encouraging you to try things and to have them eating the way that they eat with their family. And I think that's one of probably the most powerful ways to connect to a culture is through food and that experience of sharing a meal together. So I would say if there's, even when you're not in a diverse situation, even if there's an opportunity to go to a restaurant and have that experience, that can be a great way to have that experience without obviously having to live in the outback of Australia with backpackers coming for your coffee.
Yes, and I think too, I mean, our culture, or not even our culture, but just as humans, right? Like, that's coming around, with food and eating together, and that's like how we come together as humans, right? Like, from the clear back, you know, back in time. Yeah. That is how we came together, was through our food, right? We would come together, eat our something that we've hunted or gathered or whatever. And that's how we really built our community, is through food. And so I think that is super important as well to think about. And it makes me think about, I don't know if you've seen this family on YouTube, but they're like the Fernways, I think is what they call themselves. Okay. And they have, so they actually, I think they, I can't remember exactly where they live, but they travel everywhere with their two kids that are super, super young. And they've been to like Africa and Australia, and they've met like tribes like in the Amazon and like all kinds of things. And they've had so many different experiences. And I can't imagine the wealth of knowledge that their kids are gathering with that, and just getting to meet these people that live very differently than them. And it's so funny because you'll see that they like play with each other, even though they don't have the same language, somehow they can communicate and they can play and they work together and all of this stuff. And so it's really fun because they show each other like different games that they may play, and aww, they play it. So it's like super, super cool. So anyways, if you are ever looking for some cool content on YouTube, like I said, I think it's like the Fernways, but it's super cool. And I can't imagine how impactful it is for their kids to be able to see all of these different people and how they live. And it also opens my eyes to even just watching their content, like seeing how, you know, different people live and eat. And sometimes it even makes me very grateful for the way that I live. Like, my life is super easy, right? Like, yep, it's not as hard as some other people's lives in the world around us. And I think that we get so stuck in this bubble that we forget like that people are different from us and they do things differently. So I think that's super cool. And I would imagine that meeting backpackers too, they have to be a different kind of person as well, because backpacking is super, super hard, especially backpacking in Australia. I couldn't imagine. Backpack here in the West, but not in Australia.
Yeah, I can't actually imagine. I mean, things were very different back then. But there would often be incentives for folks to come to the outback, because everyone wanted to be in the main cities where all of the tourist attraction were. So the folks that made it out to the outback were the ones that were deeply passionate about having an Australian experience. And they always came with really big hearts, very open minds, and were so generous to share their experiences with us, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like I said, they are definitely wanting an experience if they're going to the Australian outback. So tell me more about Jake. He was a backpacker, is that correct?
That's
that
right.
Came through on your parents' property.
Yep.
And the impact that he had on you, and why you think that he left such a lasting impact when you were meeting all of these different people, but he was one that really stood out to you.
I think I was very little when I met him. I think I was maybe 4 or 5. And he was one of those people that, like I'd mentioned, he had such an open heart and such an open mind. He quickly became a friend of my family's, and not just someone that worked on the property, because he was so eager to learn about the Australian lifestyle and who we were as people, not just my dad employing him and him doing some work to get some money to go into the next place. And I think that willingness to meet people and sort of be so open about having new experiences and connecting with people that in theory he may not have ever seen again, building those relationships was something I think that made him really unique and different. My parents have stayed in contact with a lot of folks that came through the property, but he was just one special person because I think he felt almost like a part of the family, because he just invested in maintaining the relationship ongoing long after he left the property. And as we sort of followed his journey, he was really young at the time. I think he was 19 or 20, when he came through the property. And so he had his whole life ahead of him as well. And he went to study. He went to Africa to use what he'd learned in college, and work with the folks over there, and just sort of, again, sort of seeing the opportunity that is afforded to you when you travel and you work with and immerse yourself in different cultures. I think that had a really big impact on me because I followed his trajectory as he moved from our property back to college and then over into an entirely different continent and meeting all of these different people. And he would stay in contact with my parents and I would get the download from them because I was so little. But when he chose to adopt his kiddo and take them back to the UK, it really, there was something that sort of struck a chord in me because he was an incredibly kind person, but choosing that for your path in terms of wanting to adopt a child and knowing that adoption starts in loss and grief because it's leaving your first family. So there is that complexity and that nuance and that difficulty, but also seeing the opportunity on the other side of it. That was something that really opened my eyes to the impact of adoption and watching that child grow and flourish, seeing them grow from a little toddler into a fully flourishing adult, going to college themselves. Those are the types of things that I think left a really lasting impression on me. And we even met up with him when we were traveling. My husband and I were traveling in Europe 2 years ago. And so that relationship has been maintained for that long. And so I think the value of not only connecting with someone like that, but also being able to see their story unfold and then have that inform my story in such a profound way, I think is really powerful in terms of the importance of relationship, because I think the challenge today is that so much is online and so much is digital, that human experience and the connection that happens in person can often be lost because everything's so fast and so much easier and quicker and simple in a digital environment. But the difference between having a relationship established in person and being able to build it and maintain it over time, I can't tell you what it meant to be able to sit down and share a meal with this person, that the last time I sat down with them was when I was 5 and we were having a tea party.
Oh, so wow.
That kind of like full circle moment of sharing a meal with them was pretty wild. But that's sort of the magic of connection and of building relationship and investing in that, not only digitally, but in person as well.
Yeah, that's super awesome. And I do think that we have kind of lost that a little bit as a society, is just that social interaction that we get in person, not just online, because we are so heavily online these days. And I think that you can make a better connection with someone when you are with them in person, just because you get to really feel that person's like spirit and their vibrations and all of these different things, right, that you can't really get when you're online. And it's really hard to, I think, build a good relationship with someone via the internet, right? Like, it's so much better when you're in person and you can really feel who this person is and not just through interactions online. And I think that's super awesome. And I do think that you know, when kids are adopted, like you said, it does start in a different emotional field than, you know, usually when you're having your own child and things like that. And especially depending on like when you're adopting them and, you know, what they have been through in their life. And it is almost like, I think personally, a rebirth for that child as well. Even though they've already been born, it is like this rebirth for them. And I think that's awesome that he, you know, potentially gave this child a different life than what he may have had had he not been adopted. And so I think that's a super, super cool thing for him to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the idea of, I think many, many years ago, oftentimes parents would struggle of when to tell their child that they were adopted. I think the piece of it is the more that you can honor the first family, the more that adoption can be woven into their story from the beginning, it lessens that, because that's a trauma on its own if it's withheld. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of being able to honor the first family, recognize the importance of their role in that child's life, and mm-hmm. welcome the conversation around adoption, I think that also eases a lot of the challenges that existed previously when it was even a question of when do we tell our child that they're adopted. That's not something that exists today, hopefully, but it's something that I think creates a lot of discomfort when people are withholding that information, because that's core to who that child's story, who they are, and their story.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, even if they were super, super young, their nervous system still went through something that maybe they can't quite put into words, but they, you know, it is who they are. It is their lineage, right? Like, mm-hmm. we still have that connection to our birth parents and our lineage that we had before us. And I think it is important to talk about that. And honestly, I am not on the know of adoption and fostering and things like that. I've had students in my classroom that are adopted or are in foster care, things like that. But I'm not as closely intertwined with that. So I love that you're on here so that you can kind of share that viewpoint of it as well, which we will get into in just a second. But I do want to know what, I know you said that Jake impacted kind of like your trajectory in your life as well, but what made you really want to say, okay, I want to leave the Australian outback and I'm going to venture somewhere else and come to somewhere like the US? Did you know that over 60% of US students fall below grade level in reading, and it often starts in the grades kindergarten through second grade? Don't let your child become a statistic. My Science of Reading Simplified course gives you a step-by-step tool to teach phonics, vocabulary, writing, and reading comprehension. If you want to equip your child to succeed, start today. Visit k3homeschoolfoundations.com or check out the link down below to get started.
Yeah, I think I would say that even though I grew up in the outback, I was definitely, I would refer to myself as a city mouse as opposed to a country mouse. So the day I turned 18, I was off to the city. So I moved to Melbourne, which is a major city in Victoria out there. I studied, I worked. I just wanted to be a part of the energy, because to me, growing up in the outback, there were very limited opportunities in terms of who I could be. And what my life could look like. And for some folks, rock and roll. Like, if that's what your heart desires, then that's awesome. But for me, I wanted to know what else was out there. And so that's why I studied in Melbourne and really sort of wanted to be connected to more opportunities that were afforded in a big city. I think really the desire to move to specifically New York was built around being exposed to all of the shows that I grew up with that were set in New York, that looked like it was the most opportunity one could possibly have. And I think that's sort of the common theme throughout my life, is seeking out opportunities and where there are more and more of those available. And so I worked really hard to build up the opportunity to come to the US, and I looked for a job and was able to get one. It was one of those big, audacious, scary dreams that really sort of pushed me. And I think the idea of traveling to a new country without knowing a single soul, that immersion growing up with all of those folks that had traveled the world on their own, was something that really informed that. Because people would say, you know, like, you're really brave to come all the way here and not know anyone. And I think you have to be a little bit audacious to believe that you can move to a completely different country, find a job where you have no work history, and really set a life up there. And so I think that sort of piece of me was really oriented by those folks that I grew up around. But also, New York was just one of those places. It had so much energy that I was so drawn to because of all of the opportunity that it afforded. And so I think that was a big part of it, in terms of how I went from the outback of Australia to Melbourne and then to New York. It was very much what I was surrounded with as a kiddo.
Yeah. And like, I mean, like you said in the beginning, right? Like, you did attain a a couple of important skills to be able to actually go to another country or go somewhere where you know no one, and to be able to create relationships, create community, and get to know people on a deeper level. Because when you have all of these people that are coming to your property, right, backpackers that are coming through, and you have to, even as a young child, you're learning how to communicate and how to interact and how to accept and build community and all of these different skills that I think a lot of people don't have. And so it still was probably very uncomfortable for you, but with having that, I think it was probably helpful, I would assume, to be able to do that and bring those skills with you as you're moving to other countries.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it was actually the beauty of being a child is that you haven't sort of necessarily been molded into operating in the social norms that are established when you're an adult. And so I actually had no fear going into these environments, like the backpackers, we called them pickers huts, and they were truly huts, like they were very simple living quarters. And I would walk down there and they would be all sitting around on a Friday night, like having a chat and, you know, just talking about the week and what they were doing on the weekend. And I would just pull up a chair and sit with them and just listen. And so it was sort of like the beauty of being a child and, you know, not sort of being worried about those social norms that existed. I felt very comfortable rolling up into their conversation and inserting myself. And I probably had no business being there, but it was sort of the beauty of that being literally in my backyard. And so I think that's the thing that I would say the more exposure kids can get to those environments, albeit they're not all going to have that luxury of folks being in their backyard. But again, like seeking those out in like very accessible ways can make a really, really big impact on their trajectory longer term.
For sure. And as kids, I mean, you learn social cues very, very quickly. And so growing up that way, right, like that was just a norm to you. A social norm was to just interact with these people. And, you know, even though you were a small child, like that was just what you did. And so I think it is important to know as well that kids do catch on very quickly to social cues and how they're supposed to interact or how they're supposed to show up in the world. And so I think that's super important too, to think about when you have a child, right, that you want to expose them to these different so-called like norms or not norms, right, so that they can interact with others in the world around them.
Absolutely. I mean, I have very vivid memories of my mom having to come and get me from those conversations because I was wearing my welcome out. So like, it was a good learning of like when to get those social cues of it's time to leave.
Yep. Okay. It's time for them to just, you know, have their adult time and you're going to come in and we're going to go to bed or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. So within your story, you, and this I know has a lot to do with the founding of For the Cubs and everything as well, but you kind of went on a journey of choosing adoption over having your own children. So what inspired you to choose adoption over having your own children?
Yeah, I think I have always been very focused on my career. That was something that was very important to me. I wanted to build my career and rise the ranks and do all of those exciting things in my career. That was a priority for me. And especially in New York, I couldn't see how family and work fit together because work and career in New York is very cutthroat. There is always someone behind you waiting to take your job. And it's very much you have to grind really hard and pretty much 24/7. Like I was always available in New York when I was working. And so I couldn't quite figure out how families would exist with demanding careers. But as we moved to Austin and really sort of started to find a little bit more balance just because the demands were lower. I still love working. I still love what I do, but the demands were just a different level. And it created space for me to see opportunity to explore what our family could look like. And I didn't have the desire to be pregnant or have biological children. And it was something that I think came from obviously the impact of adoption that I grew up with and what I watched and the opportunity that created. But I also learned as I watched my friends have children, and just the commitment that it takes to grow a human. And that was pretty daunting to me. And I am constantly inspired by mothers that choose to have biological children because it is looks pretty hard. So
it is hard. I'm right now I'm 7 months pregnant and it's very hard.
There you go.
it's a daunting task. It's a task that you just kind of have to endure at times and just get through. And it definitely threw a wrench in some of the things that I was like, oh, I'll be able to do that pregnant. Well, I'll be able to do that. And then it's like, you know, it just kind of changes your plans and it's really hard and it's exhausting. It's also beautiful and it's magical. And so you feel this like very weird, like polar opposites of both things. Like you're so like grateful and happy that that is where your life is, but then you're also kind of miserable. And so you have like this guilt, but excitement, but I mean, yeah. So I mean, I don't necessarily blame you on that. Like I said, I'm getting to a point of exhaustion that I didn't know existed.
Yep.
And I'm going to, yeah. And it's going to, you know, once baby's here, it'll be more exhausting. So yeah, it is definitely different. But I also will say, I mean, even with mothers that, you know, choose to have their own kids and things like that, like obviously that has its challenges, that has its moments of excitement and joy, also sadness and all of the things. Like you're going to feel all the emotions, but on the same side of things, adoption also, I would have to assume has similar, not similar, but there is going to be similar emotions that happen. Like there's going to be all kinds of different emotions, challenges, and things that somebody that's having their own child may not experience. And so I think that's important to know as well, because your experience and what's going on that side of things is going to be very different than someone that's choosing to have their own children and things like that. So when you were making that decision, like, did any of that cross your mind? Like, were you like, I want to adopt children via foster care? Or were you just like, I want like a newborn baby? Or like, what was your thought process on that? Or what was your plan in that?
Yeah. So when my husband and I talked about it, we felt very drawn to the foster care system, and wanting to focus our efforts on serving kids and families in the foster care system. And the way we did that was we attended an orientation session where they give you a very sort of high level view on how foster care works and our role within it. And a big thing that I think is missed in sort of the general conversation around foster care is the objective is reunification. So you're not actually showing up when you accept a call for an emergency placement and you say, yes, I'll take that child. It's in service of reunifying them with their family. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, something that can get really easily missed in sort of, there's a term foster to adopt. But the nature of that is foster care happens first and reunification is always the priority and the objective when that child enters the system. And so it's not until every possible scenario has been exhausted that they are considered legally free, which is, means when rights have been terminated by the parents, and that a family member may not be able to take them either. And so that's when they can be adopted by a non-family member. And oftentimes it can be the people who have been fostering them throughout that journey. And so I think a big part of that was learning that nuance. It in theory sounds really easy and yep, sure, of course, like they're in the system, we're helping this family while they need to do the work they need to do to be able to safely have their children back in their care. When they're with you and you're caring for them every day and you're loving them, it's really hard because you know that they're going to ideally be reunified. And so there's been many situations where people say, oh, you'll get so attached. And I was like, absolutely. That's my job. Like it is my job to love this child like my own until their parents can reassume their role. I'm a stand-in parent, but it doesn't mean that I love them any less. It doesn't mean that I don't get attached. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't stand in front of a bus for them, because that is truly like when you are caring for a child in this circumstance, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't do anything for them. Because there's been so many situations where I've sacrificed multiple things in my personal life for a child because they need me in that moment. But the challenge and the sort of struggle can often be, particularly for foster parents who welcome, you know, some, like I've spoken to some families that have had 30, 40, 50 kids in their care over their period of fostering. And so saying goodbye to that many kids really can take a toll. And so that's oftentimes where you'll see foster families needing to take a break, or you'll hear about respite where they will need to just sort of cover another foster family for a period of time. But that's really sort of how we're approaching it, is until a child doesn't have the opportunity for reunification, we're always focused on just caring for them and being that stand-in. And you start to learn as a foster parent that it's more about serving the family than it is just about the child, because you're giving them that opportunity to raise their child long-term. Even though for that very brief period of time, it's incredibly traumatic for the entire family. Mm-hmm. If they're willing to do the work, then they will be able to be reunified.
Yeah, I definitely can't imagine the grief that you have to go through when you do have to do that, because you do, like you said, you gain an attachment with this child. And I mean, I don't know that as far as fostering goes, but even as an educator, you know, at the end of every year, like I got to know these kiddos so, so well. And I was with them for, you know, seven hours a day. Yeah. And you get that connection. And same thing, like as a teacher, I'm like, you know, like I would put my life on the line for these little kiddos, because they just take a little place of your heart. And it's just that connection that you get with them. And so I can't imagine the grief process that you also have to go through, even though you are probably very happy that the family has done the work and they are going to get their kid back, right? Like that's the hope in this whole situation, is that the child can go back with the family and they can raise their child and it can be a different circumstance for them. However, as the foster parent, depending on how long you have them and all of this stuff, like you are treating them as your own. And I just can't imagine that grief process that you have to go through, but also feeling that excitement and joy for the child that they get to go back with mom and dad, because ultimately that's the goal. And so I think that's super important to discuss as well, because I just couldn't imagine, what that's like.
I think the hardest part is when the orders are granted for reunification, nothing that you, like no routines, no processes, no things that you've done with the child translate. So you don't get to know that the child is going to have their bath and their jammies and their, you know, the this and the that, and all the special things that you have created for them to feel safe and know consistency and stability. None of that is expected to translate. So it's not like you can like send them the schedule and expect it's going to happen. You're literally handing over the child and they resume whatever style parenting that they hopefully learned through their services while working the case. But the reality is, like, handing over that reality is the hard, I think one of the hard parts. And the other parts is that you sometimes just don't know how they're going to be. And I think that's one of the things, and that's a part of being attached to the child and loving the child, is like wanting the best for them, but also just letting go of any ability that you have to inform whether they're safe, whether they're happy, whether they're getting what they need, because that's now the parent's opportunity to raise and parent their child, which is they rightfully deserve. But that's just, I think, one of the harder parts, is just not knowing what happens, you know?
Yes, no, that would be super hard. I had an experience in my last year of teaching that a child had to go through some experiences where they were then put into like foster care for a little while, and just the emotions that I saw that child have to go through in that time period. And like, there were just times where like literally I would come home and I would just like have this big emotional like release, because I felt so much for this child that they were having such a hard time with all of these processes in their life, is just being, you know, completely changed. And then they're, you know, with mom, and then they're not with mom. And then they, and it's just like, it's so, so hard for these littles. I taught first grade. So like, we're talking like little littles, right? And so it's hard for them to process like everything that's going on and why they are going from one place to the other. And why, you know, why am I not with mom anymore? Why am I with this family? And it really does affect them so, so much. And so I am grateful for those families that can step in and really treat them as their own and love them as their own. And that does have to be hard to know, like, okay, now that they're back with mom or dad or grandma or whoever, right, that they're going back with, like, are, I hope that they are doing what is best for the child, and that they are, you know, they've done the work so that they can do what's best for the child. And I can't imagine really having that different connection of being a foster parent and then having to say, okay, I'm putting all faith back into this family to do what is best for them as well.
Yep, absolutely.
So do you have any advice for someone that is wanting to go down the foster care or adoption route?
Ooh, yes, I have so much advice. And I'm still learning, and I've been caring. I've cared for 10 kids. So you're learning with every case. I think that would be suggestion or consideration number one, is like, you will have all the training on how to care for a kiddo that's experienced trauma, come from hard places, all of those things. But nothing will prepare you until you take your first placement and you are navigating through the team, the personalities on the team, what their objectives or agenda are, the dynamic of the parents. If, you know, oftentimes something I didn't fully appreciate was sometimes it won't be safe for them to know who you are. And so really understanding the circumstances in which the child is coming into care, so you can keep them safe and you can keep your family safe. And also just appreciating, and it's really annoying, because when you go through training, likely your agency will tell you every case is different. So they can't really give you a through line of what to expect. And the reality is every case is literally different. The case that I have now versus the case that I was attached to before, their circumstances were night and day in so many different ways. And there was really no through line with both of them. I think maybe the one consistent thing would be that the first 2 months are going to be some of the hardest moments of your life in your foster care journey, because there are so many moving parts and there is so much that is up in the air. And it's really hard to remember that this child has been placed in a complete stranger's home. And while you may be offering the most nurturing, most stable, most consistent environment, and it's just wonderful, and it would, you know, anything that a child would dream of, it's not their normal. Mm-hmm. You're not their family. Mm-hmm. And what they're experiencing may be so incredibly foreign to them that it is alarming in their nervous system to the environment, because it may be too calm. It may be too consistent. Mm-hmm. And so all of those things will sort of have you wondering, like, what else can we do? And the reality is it's just time. You need time to get to know each other, to settle into a rhythm, to learn the child. I think one of the tricky parts of foster care is, especially depending on the age ranges that you accept. Previously, we had an infant. And so the needs of that child was very different to the toddler slash, pre-K age child that we have now. Mm-hmm. And so you're sort of dumped into that developmental cycle. So just learning what's normal for that developmental stage is a learning curve to begin with. Mm-hmm. But then learning what triggers them, what they love, how to respond to them in certain moments, things like that, they're going to be big learning curves too. But just give it 2 months is my suggestion, because things will just start to ease and smooth out after that, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely does take time for kids to adapt to their new environment and their new normal, right? Like you said, like there could be traumas that they experienced that they have to work through as well. And then they're in the stranger's home while trying to work through them. And if you have really young kids, right, like they don't quite know how to work through that trauma. Like they are completely lost in all of the emotions that they're feeling and they don't know how to handle that situation, right? And so I do think it is important to give them so much time. And I mean, really, consistency is one thing that if you can give a nervous system at least some sort of consistency, it does allow them to actually work through those emotions, because consistency is one thing that they can actually know is going to happen, right? Like they know that they're going to get breakfast every day. They know that they're going to have this schedule and that schedule and things are going to happen at this time. And as they learn these consistencies within their life, that gives their nervous system time to be like, okay, I don't have to be in fight, flight, or freeze. I can actually like release anything I'm feeling or move past what I'm feeling. And so I think that is super important. Time, consistency, all of that stuff, I think is super, super important.
Yep, absolutely. And I think the other thing is really just understanding that not everything's going to be a trauma response.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's just kids being kids.
Exactly.
And that's a big part of it. Oftentimes I'll see new foster parents being like, well, is this a trauma response? And is this a honestly, like kids, like most of the time kids are doing their very, very best to show up as a human with what they have available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so 9 times out of 10, I assume that something is just developmental. Unless there's something that's really striking that seems to stand out. Mm-hmm. And so I think to the point of having consistency and stability, it actually helps you understand if there are certain things you need to be looking out for that child, that they may need additional resources or services and support to be able to navigate through that. And one example was I'm currently working with our placement and teaching them how to express hard feelings. Because previously it wasn't safe to have feelings at all. And so the idea was that I was showing them how to scream into a pillow, which was one of those things I never thought I would have. Like, it's not something you sort of think parenting wise, but they were so surprised that I gave them an outlet on how to actually experience that feeling in a really healthy, safe way. And I think that's something that you'll often find you're surprised in foster parenting that you're just doing really a lot of parenting. Like it's one of those things where you're showing up and 9 times out of 10, those are the things that show up and really stand out in ways where like that's a tool that every human needs to know how to express their feelings healthily. So yeah, it's definitely opened my eyes to a lot of foster parenting is just straight up parenting.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, I think that showing our emotions in a healthy way is something that all kids have to learn, because, you know, you're going to learn how to handle your emotions based on the adults around you. And that's really how you learn, unless someone actually tells you like, hey, this is how we can show X, Y, and Z emotion, you know, and this is how we can do it in a healthy way. And if you're feeling anxious, this is what we can do. If we're feeling sad, this is what we can do. These are some things that we can do to help us feel better, right? So I think that's super important. And like you said, that doesn't even have to do with trauma responses, right? Like I had lots of kids in my classroom that they didn't come from any traumatic backgrounds or anything like that, but they needed help as these littles, right, to understand how to regulate themselves and how to navigate the emotions that they're feeling and how to have a healthy response to those emotions and really work through them. So I think that's something that's important that you're going to have to teach really all kids. Honestly, it's an important skill for everyone. So with your business for the Cubs, I know that your grandfather's passing did help shape and mold the business. So can you go into a little more detail on how your grandfather and his passing kind of helped you to shape the business that you are the founder of?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the Cubs was a culmination of so many different things. It was happening in parallel with being licensed to be a foster parent. My grandfather paid a big role in my upbringing and my childhood as well. I would spend a lot of time at his place with my Nana on the weekends. And it was just, I was so fortunate to have that experience with a grandparent that was very present and very eager to participate in my life and be a strong support. And he was sort of one of those places, him and his space was where I felt like I belonged, like I could show up exactly as I was. And today there aren't a lot of spaces where we can do that as humans. And as things get more and more critical, and you know, the internet is the internet, and people show up how they want to be, not being their best selves, it can really impact the way we feel that we belong. And I think belonging is something that we all crave as humans. And when I think about the environment that my grandfather created for me, it was just, you're welcome here exactly as you are. And so thinking about that, I was learning in foster care training that we need 8 to 12 hugs a day to maintain our emotional well-being. And so I thought instantly of like the importance of offering hugs in this brand. I had always known that I wanted to build a business. I hadn't quite landed on the idea yet. And this was when sort of everything came together, where I learned about this insight about the hugs that we need every day. My grandfather fell ill, and I was designing a weighted bear. And so, as I was sort of developing him, he unfortunately passed away. He was 93, so he had lived a very long life. And I wanted a way to capture the spirit of what he offered, which was just calm, kind, non-judgmental energy that I always felt supported by. And so I sort of mirrored some of the characteristics of the bear from him. So the glasses were from him. The bear has a couple of tufts of hair that sort of sweep back. That was from him. And his name, my Nana had a nickname for him, Percy. And they were married for 50 years. And I just thought that was a really sweet way to sort of nod to that as well. So that's how Percy the bear, the weighted bear, came to be. And it was a really lovely way to think that now there's thousands of this bear supporting people through some of their hardest moments in life, both kids and adults. That was something that really surprised me when I launched Percy and For the Cubs. A lot of adults gravitated towards him and the support that they can offer or get from Percy. And so that was a lovely insight to think that I'm not just helping kiddos manage and navigate these hard moments in life. I'm helping everyone of all ages navigate through those hard parts because, you know, life is really complicated and hard and nuanced. And so the idea of being able to put some good energy out into the world, through the memory of my grandfather was a really beautiful way to do that.
Yeah, that's a super beautiful story, I think. And I think that your grandfather would also just love that his unconditional love for you and allowing you to show up in the world in the way that you need to show up in the world is now being passed on to whoever on the internet decides to buy this bear. And I want to kind of I don't know exactly, like you probably would know more on this too, with the adults that are buying it, like it would almost make me wonder, like, is it because we're, this is just like kind of a random thought, but is it because we are such a internet world now and we're not as like connected as far as like community goes and everything as well, that like we need to have that support elsewhere because we're not getting it like in our own lives. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really valid thought because a lot of people don't realize that community and connection in person and support in person is a real privilege. There are so many people that have written me emails or written reviews or just like said in passing, how much support they felt from Percy because they were lonely. I had one woman who emailed me and her husband had passed away, and Percy was her comfort. And she said, "I feel like my husband would be okay with Percy giving me comfort and support." And to think that that was the role, because she was just grieving him, so she missed him so much. That was her companion in life. And this bear is helping her navigate through that grief and that loss, because that was probably the person she saw every day and was her community. And so I think through that aspect of the internet and digital platforms sort of becoming the way we connect, the experience of feeling supported, not just through words, but through physical touch and through just the act of hugging, is pretty powerful. And I think that's the thing that I genuinely feel so humbled and honored to be able to offer to the world, because it's something that's so much bigger than what I even imagined.
Well, and it's so simple too, when you think about the fact that like a simple hug is literally just going to help someone. Like, it's free, it's easy. You can, I mean, obviously don't go out there and just hug people, but you know what I'm saying? But it is so simple. And that was like one thing, even in my classroom, like I always greeted every single child by name every day. And I always gave them a choice on how they wanted to be greeted. And so one of those options was a hug. So they could choose like a hug, a fist bump, a high five, you know. And surprisingly, like most of my students would choose a hug. Like they just wanted a hug for the day. And even at the end of the day, like I never did like a special greeting at the end of the day, but even then, like they would want a hug goodbye or something like that, right? And so I think that it's so important that we, something so simple can change somebody's whole day. Like as just a hug, right? Like you said, the 8 to 10 hugs helps with regulating our nervous system. Like even just one hug, like it can change so much. So I think that's so awesome that you've created something where people can get that, even if they aren't getting it in the world, you know, out in their personal lives.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit more about For the Cubs and what your mission is. I was on the website and I was kind of, you know, just browsing and seeing what you had. I saw Percy the Bear, and then I just saw like a bunch of other stuff that you can purchase. And so really, like, what is For the Cubs and what is your mission?
Yes. So I think the mission is to celebrate the beauty of belonging. And belonging, when I would think about that, starts at home. It starts when you get brought home by your parents and they help you learn how to eat and sleep and soothe. And so they're the three collections that we offer on the site. Parenting is very hard to begin with. And so the ability to have these sort of core needs met with these products, because they're just the basics of, as a parent, you want to show up to teach them those pieces and nurture them in your home. And so I wanted to offer just the basics. There's a lot of stuff that is on baby registries and on, you know, things that kids should have. And so I just wanted to distill it down into the most simple, purest aspects of what it means to create belonging. And so that's how the collections came about, for eating, sleeping, and soothing.
Okay.
And in terms of sort of the color palettes, that's also very intentional. The calmer that we can be, the more we are open to learning and to exploring and to being vulnerable and all of those beautiful things that humanity offers us. And so in a calm environment, that was something I wanted to offer for parents. So oftentimes a lot of kids' products are very bright, striking primary colors, and I certainly appreciate the developmental value of that. However, something that I found was the more that I could regulate myself when I'm caring for kiddos, the better they're able to regulate themselves. So when they're having a big feeling, when they're having a hard moment, instead of having a reaction, if I'm able to regulate myself and keep myself calm, they're able to calm down and sort of center themselves a lot faster. And so I think the piece for me there was, I was learning that I don't respond well to bright colors and very busy things. And so being able to offer these muted color palettes and very soft, gentle textures was a big part of curating that calmness for parents, so they can show up for their kiddos.
Yeah, I think that's so, so important. Like even what you said with you being the regulator, I think, and I do think that's why parents can get so, so exhausted in their everyday, because you really are their regulator. You have to be the person that is regulating your emotions. You have to be like the rock that holds everything together. And so it can be really hard to just be the rock all day long, 24/7. You are constantly having to regulate yourself so that they can regulate themselves. And then it's like, when do you have time to also have your own releases that you need, right? Because there can be times where things are happening and you just want to like scream too, right? Like they're out of their mind and you just want to be like, ah, me too. Like I feel that. But you also have to be the calm, the rock, so that they can regulate. And then it's like, okay, now I need to go and like release my own emotions, right? And I think that's so important to note just as a parent, that like, it's okay that, you know, there are going to be times where you're probably going to have a moment where you can't be the regulator for that second in time. And that's okay too. But I think that's important to note that your environment is going to determine whether or not you can regulate, right? And if you have a lot of clutter or stimulation or whatever, that's going to affect your ability to stay calm in certain situations.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the pieces that I still find myself when I'm handling a big feeling and I'm de-escalating a situation for the kiddo in my care. There is a natural inclination, because kids' experiences are so big and like so filled with emotion. Mm-hmm. It's such a contrast to, as an adult, what you're normally used to experiencing. Mm-hmm. And so it can really help, like it can really trigger some reactions that you want to have. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the piece that I realized, like being able to manage that. It can be really hard, but I sort of think about it like going to the gym and building muscle in the mm-hmm. gym. It's going to take some practice.
Oh, for sure.
But the more that you can do it and more you can practice that co-regulation with them, the more it's actually going to help in the long run. And ultimately, it's if you can sort of practice that and have the uncomfortable process of building that capability, mm-hmm. you're going to have a kiddo that knows how to navigate big, hard, uncomfortable emotions in a much more effective way.
For sure. When I was dealing with harder kids in my classroom that were having these large emotional, you know, outbursts, and like you said, kids do not hold back. They will not hold back their emotion. They feel them to the very fullest. And so I would find myself like the things that we would talk about in class, right? On how we can manage our anger, how we can manage our sadness or our anxieties or whatever. And I would even find myself like, as I'm trying to be the calm and the rock for them, as they're having these emotional releases, like, okay, I'm like going through the steps that I've taught them to like really focus on that. And then like helping them to remember too. Like it was something that was really helpful to like regulate myself and also help to regulate them. And it like calmed everyone down, like myself included, because like you said, those emotional outbursts can really affect you as well when you've got a child that is feeling that to the fullest. And it can sometimes feel like you're going to break, I will say. And I, like I said, that's just as an educator's point of view. Like I cannot imagine, like I said, as a parent, when you're doing it 24/7, how it can get exhausting.
Absolutely. That's why just having that ability to have those supports that are very simple can make all the difference.
For sure. So how can people find you and your company if they would like to make a purchase to help a child in foster care?
Yes. So you can visit forthecubs.com and you will be happy to know that every order supports kids in foster care through our nonprofit partner, One Simple Wish. And a big reason that we partnered with them is because every donation that we're making on behalf of our customers is directly impacting a child that is experiencing foster care or has been connected to child welfare. So they'll not only get to know that they're directly impacting that child, but also they'll get to see the wishes that we're granting, and they'll get those updates to see more about the child and just learn who that whole human is that is they've impacted just by shopping with us on forthecubs.com.
I think that's so amazing. I think that you're providing products that are going to be helpful for parents, and then while also helping those kids that are in foster care. So I think that you are doing great things in this world, and I'm so glad that you've created this company. And I will also put the link to the website down in the description so that people can go there and find maybe something that they may need. Maybe they just need Percy the Bear, and that's fine too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's amazing. But it has been such a pleasure talking to you, Amy, and getting to know you and, you know, what your mission is in this world. And I just hope that you have continued success in your life and your business and your family and all of that. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.